talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth. And when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evidence with Prince, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprint on BBSRadio.com. It is May the 28th, for those of you on the West Coast, still Wednesday. Already May the 29th, or Thursday on the East Coast, and points in between. You know your time zones. Got a great show for you this evening. Before I bring on tonight's guest, I want to refer to a snafu that prevented Dr. Kasim Khalil from appearing on the show last night. We had a wonderful two-hour show planned, and as things would have it, we were short-circuited and just did not establish communication with him. But I did speak with him today, and he is going to be rescheduled for next Tuesday, June the 3rd. So you want to make sure you listen to that show. It's going to be incredibly revealing. He's gone down the rabbit hole on some holy scriptures, and we're going to be talking about the book of Barnabas that Barnabas transcribed for Jesus. And we're also going to be talking about the Quran and making some comparisons because they are exactly alike. It's very startling. I've been reading two books that he has written, and what he has uncovered just blows my mind. And it all rings true, which is very interesting because it makes sense when you compare it to all the dogma that we have floating around the organized religious community these days. So Dr. Kasim Khalil will be with us next Tuesday, June 3rd. Mark that down on your calendars. And just a quick update, we had a call-in from Michael Herzog. His stepdaughter, Megan, was abducted by the INS and probably under the direction of Homeland Security. So we are in a Nazi state, and it's very appropriate to talk about that. Tonight's guest is going to be talking about with me about some things pertaining to the election planned for November, and we're going to be talking about hidden agendas and archaeology as well. So with that, I would like to bring on board, I think this is at least her third time, if not now the fourth time, one of my favorite guests on Evident Footprints, and I hope yours too, Toni Elizabeth Sarab Petrinovich, Ph.D. Toni, good evening and welcome to Evident Footprints. How are you?
Good evening, Don. I'm wonderful. Thank you very much. That's too bad to hear about Michael Herzog's daughter. That's awful.
Well, the Patriot community is banding together to take steps to assist Michael. And, of course, part of it is getting the story out there. Can't count on the mainstream, as you know. They're prostitutes, and so we're going to do it, and we're going to keep the faith that God is going to answer our prayers. We're all praying for Michael and his family.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. This other fellow you talked about who didn't show up on the show last night because of the snafu, the books sound very, very interesting. I'll have to look that up. That sounds extremely interesting for what I'm doing some research on myself right at the moment.
Yes, the book about Jesus, and this is the scripture taken by Barnabas, is called The Secrets Scripture. Mm-hmm. And then the other book, which he has written, is called The Magnificent Message. What is interesting in both of these books is Jesus and Muhammad had the same message.
Right, that's true.
Literally the same message. In fact, Jesus prophesied that Muhammad would come, mm-hmm. and that he would take care of certain things that Jesus did not come here to do.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very fascinating reading, I have to tell you. And it will bring you to tears.
Yeah, I definitely will look those up. That's wonderful. I'm in the process of doing background research for memories and visions that I have had for 30 years that I'm ready to put into text and to let people know what those memories and visions have been. And it's actually where my name Sarah comes from. And Sarah is the daughter of Jesus and Mary Magdalene. And before I ever knew that, before I even thought of that name, the visions and the memories were there. So it wasn't though it was prompted by something I read or what have you.
Mm-hmm.
And I've put them together, and now I'm just doing a little research for background. And I'm going to put together a book, Sarah, the Daughter of Jesus. And it's going to be really, really wonderful. It's very, very fulfilling. It feels very, very good because I've been living with it for 30 years and thinking about it for 30 years and watching all the pieces fall into place unexpectedly. And the other day, one of the things that I was told in a vision was that I would know the time when it was right for me to speak, to say something.
Mm-hmm.
And easily 25 years ago, and I haven't felt that until I was reading an email that had absolutely nothing to do with any of this, and all of a sudden, just a few words in it just popped inside of me, and I went, oh my gosh, it's time. And so I've been accumulating all the information over all these years, and I'm putting it together, and I'm really looking forward to this.
I myself had kind of the same revelation last January 1st, in fact,
mm-hmm.
and I was already writing, and I had a piece that was about to be published, and you know, that voice just said, okay, it's time to go on the radio, time to start
mm-hmm.
calling in, and before I knew it, I had a show.
Exactly.
Speaking of your name, when you mention the name Sarah, what comes to mind, and this is probably because of my music background, mm-hmm. Doris Day used to sing your name all the time in the song,
Hey
Sarah,
Sarah. Right. Whatever will be, will be. Exactly.
I had to get my joke in there. So.
I know. I knew that was coming. It's you, of course. What else would we expect?
Well, yeah, I can go off the deep end on the other emotional level, too. So, there's just a lot of really chaotic stuff going on in politics and...
Oh, yeah.
And the news and world events and the economy and it's really a lot of obfuscation and deceit and concealment is how I
mm-hmm.
see it. I mean, it's pure deception. And
mm-hmm.
and I know that you want to talk about that, not necessarily in a negative sense, but, you know, that we bring something positive out of this.
Well, that's true. And at the same time, one of the things that I don't feel very many people look at, nor do they believe that they have access to the information, which isn't necessarily true, is that all of this is coming through bloodlines that are so ancient on this planet. It's like we're reliving the same thing over and over and over again. And it takes our deciding, and it means each person's decision, to change the course of events in their own life, to change it all. Otherwise,
mm-hmm.
we just get, it's kind of like when people live through, you know, they'll say, how come I always choose this mate, or how come I always get this kind of job? Well, it's that same thing on a much grander scale, where we just keep recreating and recreating and recreating the same thing over and over again. And I really feel so strongly that people really need to get shaken up enough to make a decision that they're going to choose a different kind of life. And right at this moment, as I am speaking, I am not seeing a lot of that, and therefore I constantly put it out there over and over again, in like I do a YouTube every week, and post it and send out emails, and if anybody wants to be on my email list, we'll mention my email later, and I will definitely put you on my list, to let people realize how responsible they are for what is happening and what's going to happen next. It's kind of like people talk about being a chess piece on the game board. That's not true. They're the game board. They are
mm-hmm.
the board. They're the ones making the game. It's not like they're just a little piece being moved around. And what decisions are they going to make on a day-to-day basis if they want to see something different happen?
Yes. Now, I'm happy to hear you say this because I think you know this a little bit from our talks off the air as well as anything you've heard in any of my broadcasts, including the ones that you participate in. And I have been today on the TNT NewsHour on BBS. Every Wednesday I do this show at 1 o'clock West Coast time.
Mm-hmm.
And I got into, you know, the spirit sort of took over, and I was describing that we have these people in the spiritual movement, and I'm not attacking those in the spiritual movement. Mm-hmm. I consider myself part of that.
Mm-hmm.
But we have this convenience of denying everything else that's happening around us, mm-hmm. as if it's not really happening. Now, is that just because we see everything as an illusion, or is that because we choose not to face it? We want to pretend or imagine that it's not there. And the words I used were rather strong, and I was just telling people to get off their rear ends and start looking at everything and deciding where they can use their gifts to help people that are on the verge of waking up, or really would wake up if someone would approach them and,
right.
and deliver a solid message.
Mm-hmm.
So I have this, you know, there's part of me, because I'm doing all of it, I think, you know, the full spectrum, I expect others to pick up some slack and stop just living up in the clouds all the time.
Yeah.
If you know what I mean. You want to comment on that and tell me I'm crazy, or?
Well, no, I think it's true, and I think when you said that, it reminded me of this client I had years ago when I was talking about the 100th monkey story, you know, the 100th monkey syndrome, that story.
Yes.
About the monkeys that all of a sudden everybody was washing their food. And I was telling him that story, and he said, oh, so you mean that there could be ascension by default? And I said, well, if you want to look at it that way. And he goes, well, that's what I want. He said, I don't want to have to do anything. If everybody else is going to do, and he was serious, if everybody else is going to do the work, and then I'm just going to be able to take advantage of it because of the 100th monkey idea, then I'll just wait and just change by default. I won't have to do anything.
That's called spiritual welfare monkey style.
Yeah, right, exactly. Exactly. It's exactly what it is. And I feel that, and I'm sensing, and I'm watching it happen. I watch people, they're so lost in their own lives, and they are so wound up in their own ego personality that they can't get out of it enough to realize that whatever it is that they're experiencing that they don't like, they're contributing to it and making more and more and more of it.
Mm-hmm.
And when you were talking about, you know, get off your duff and do something, and you were speaking, you know, very frankly about that, I was just musing today about how easy it is to create relationship and change in relationship when you just open your mouth. I was at the grocery store, and there's a checker that I see all the time, and we just have this, she's the checker, I'm the customer relationship, and though she's very nice, we just never talk. And I said, wow, look at you, you've been out in the sun, you've got a great tan, it looks super. And she goes, well, I know I'm not supposed to be out in the sun, but I just love it so much. And I said, quite frankly, I don't believe that bull about you're not supposed to be out in the sun. I said, I don't think it's true. And she looked at me and she goes, neither do I. And I said, and I've read several research papers that say that the suntan lotion that we use contributes to skin cancer, and the more you put on, the worse it'll get.
And the less vitamin D you get, yeah.
Yes, and I said, and quite frankly, that's where I stay. She goes, I read the same paper, and all of a sudden we have this whole new rapport going on because I said how I really felt, rather than saying, well, yeah, I know, everybody says they're not supposed to be on the sun, and just going along with it just because it would have been easier to do. Now, I'm only using that as an example where people can actually step forth and really say what's in their heart rather than just going along with the program, which is
mm-hmm.
what 99% of the people do.
Yes.
So it's just like, okay, folks, what do we got to do to shake you up enough so that you actually take a look at what part you're responsible for in this world that we're living in? Because it's not just me and it's not just you, it's everybody.
Well, and you're so right. That word responsibility is the key to it, personally and then collectively.
Yeah, exactly. And it has to be individual responsibility for, whoops, are we supposed to do something?
No, no. There was a strange noise there, but we're still here.
It sounded like a pause moment. No, it's responsible for the way you act, the way you teach your children, the way you treat people in your community, even when you're driving down the street. People talk about road rage and how upset everybody is on the highway. Well, if everybody is upset, then everybody can know that everybody else is upset too. You're not alone. So why doesn't everybody not act nice? You know, I mean, it's just these simple little things that are just everybody's everyday life that nobody thinks is important. And every single breath of it is important because it contributes to the whole. We're living like in a hologram so that everything that each person does, it affects everything and everybody.
Mm-hmm. That's true. And you know, you put that energy out into the universe, and it comes back according to how you put it out.
Exactly.
With the power, with the intention. And I think power is an important word, too, because I hear people use words like, well, I'm trying to do this. I'll try to come over.
Right.
I'll try. I'm trying my hardest. I'm trying my darndest. And maybe I'll make it. And
mm-hmm.
I want this, and I need this. And they're reinforcing all of those negatives
mm-hmm.
using words that they really don't intend to use. They wouldn't choose if they knew how they were undermining and sabotaging their future.
Exactly.
And everyone else's.
And it really amounts to thinking about what's coming out of your mouth before you say it. Really thinking about it and feeling it. And, you know, I heard once, you know, the analogy of realizing that the words that are coming out of your mouth have to pass through your throat and touch your skin first before they come out.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever you're saying is affecting you in that way.
Now you're making me regret my Doris Day comment earlier.
Why?
No, I'm just kidding.
It was a joke. Oh, heavens to Betsy. No,
I'm just kidding.
Well, it just, you know, and I must admit, sometimes I just look him in the mirror and go, Tony, get a grip. I've been living in this state and working with these principles for so long that I don't know how to be any other way. And so I get really surprised when I find out that they're absolutely strange to some people. And there's a lot of people that would say, what are you talking about? I just open my mouth and I say what I want to say. Well, all right. How about trying something different? How about attempting to think about what you're going to say, how you feel about it before you say it, and what you're creating as you say the words? Because everything we say destroys something and it creates something. Every time.
Mm-hmm.
That's part of duality. That's what the duality of the metaphysical premise is. That everything is destroyed and then recreated. So what do we want to destroy and what do we want to create? What do we want to create in this moment? And I know that a lot of people use this as an excuse for not looking at things as they are, as you were saying, you know. The way things
mm-hmm.
are right now, okay, but then how do you want them to be different? You have to verbalize the difference. You have to be it. You have to exercise that. Otherwise, it's not going to happen. Nobody else is going to do it for you.
Yeah, and you have to make a conscious choice, too. This is not something that happens by accident or by luck or, you know, through buying a lottery ticket. You know, I hear this, well, someday when I win the lottery, I'm going to... Well, you know, the odds of that happening are very, very slim, and therefore you're already couching your intention in tremendous odds against you. So why even say it?
Well, yeah, it's also the lazy man's that way out too. You know, it's just give me something, and everything that I don't like will go away.
Yeah,
which isn't necessarily true. Getting back to this bloodline routine. I really feel, and I've mentioned Zachariah Sitchin's work before on the program, that, and I'm sure he's not the only one that's ever written any book about the Anunnaki, except that he's been the number one writer about them, that the bloodline of the beings who came here 450,000 years ago that actually manipulated our DNA and started this whole war event on this planet, they're still here, for starters. And secondly, that's mainly where we get all of this throwback to the Illuminati and all of these hidden agendas that are coming up in all of the politics in all of the countries. And I've done quite a bit of research on it, not as much as I would like to, but I have done enough over the years to know that you can follow the threads, much like you do in your research, and you can trace it back. And if people realize that the things that they do that are warlike and angry and revenge and all of those things that are the negatives that people say they don't like but do anyway actually come from genes within our body that were manipulated to make us be that way, that perhaps they take a second look and if they want to act basically subhuman. I mean, mm-hmm. it doesn't even really make any sense because at a very basic level, we are benevolent beings.
Yes.
And I realize that a lot of people think that we're reptilian-brained animals, et cetera, et cetera. Well, if that's what you want to be, then go for it. But yeah, on a total basis of your whole beingness, if you got a person, you know, you sat them down and you talked to them long enough, you'd find out that what they really want is peace, love, companionship, comfort. I mean, we all want the same things.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of bloodlines, if I can ask you a question and
sure.
relate something to you. About a week or 10 days ago, I had this understanding. You know how when you get that moment mm-hmm. of nirvana or samadhi? The aha moment. It came to me that these so-called bloodlines of the Illuminati, whether you want to call them reptilian or Anunnaki or whatever name, whatever label you want to put on them, mm-hmm. they were of AB negative blood type, and that through the manipulation of our DNA, and much of that was done through changing our blood by what they fed us or what they gave us to drink,
yes.
that has created all the other blood types, the O positive, O negative.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah.
Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, I don't know that from a research scientific standpoint, but it makes absolutely perfect sense, yes.
And I think therein lies all the cause of disease, too.
That's very possible.
The changing of our blood.
One of the things that they used to do, and this was written down, it's in the Sumerian tablets, so it's not like I'm sitting here making this up or pulling it out of the air or trying to channel the woo-woos. they would have the people that they chose to create as what they called priest kings, they would have them drink the Anunnaki female's menstrual blood. And in doing so...
On the rocks, came, hopefully.
On the rocks. Maybe it was still warm. I don't know.
I mean, I hate to be so graphic, but, you know, if I can have a twist... Can I have a lime twist with that, please? Maybe a shot of Tabasco.
A celery stick.
Yes. Is that where the Bloody Mary came from?
The Bloody Mary, there we go. My morning cocktail.
Okay,
anyway,
so.
That's okay. This changed the DNA and the blood of these men. It was all men that they chose. And Abraham's father, whose name I can't remember right at the very moment, it begins with a T, Abraham's father was the first one. And he and his bloodline down the road and others, there's other branches of it, were given this substance to drink so that they would be more like the Anunnaki. And they would have some of the attributes, and they would have some of the leadership qualities, and they would have all of these things, and it changed their gene structure, change their DNA, and as you said, it could very easily have been the beginning of what we call dis-ease in the body because it was a foreign substance.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what else it did. I mean, it didn't write down, and by the way, so-and-so got, you know, threw up and got sick and died. So I don't know what it could have done. But that particular way to change DNA is something that created a whole sequence of bloodlines that branched off, and you can, there's all kinds of books you can read that take you through the whole genealogy way, way, way back. And to this day, it's in existence.
Mm-hmm. Now, some people say that Abraham's father, not that I want to go off on the biblical end, some people say it was Terah, and then there were others that say it was Noah. I guess it.
I've never heard of it being Noah before.
Yeah, some people say, like in Acts 7:4, how you interpret those passages there has everything to do with who the Father was. I think I mentioned to you also that I had read in the Urantia book that they had assigned Abraham to watch over the uranium, and that's where the name Ur came from.
Okay, that makes sense.
He was the guardian of the uranium.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I think I mentioned also that possibly Sitchin had referred to that also. I really am not clear on that, but to me it made a lot of sense.
Oh yeah, definitely, because they had all kinds of weapons, and there is evidence of nuclear wars that were waged. There's pieces of the Sinai Desert to this day that are radioactive, and you could see them from the satellite photographs of them. You could see where it's all black and it's radioactive.
Mm-hmm.
So these weapons were in place a long time ago, and the wars were cataclysmic. They were horrible. And here we are again, and we're fighting over the same piece of land. And here we've got our government going in there fighting over the same piece of land because of the bloodlines.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a matter of tracing that back.
Now, how do we bring all of this understanding into a place where we can deal with what's going on today in the world?
Then what I do with it, and everybody is, welcome to do whatever they want to do with it, is to realize it's here, realize it. This is the way things are, quote unquote, so to speak. And how do I want to feel in myself about it, short of the fact that I can't necessarily change the bloodlines myself? What I can do is to hold these beings in the awareness that they are source material. They're God stuff, just like I am. And they are doing what they believe makes them happy. People only do things when it makes them feel happy, what benefits them. People don't do things so that they can feel worse. And this is the reason all of this is happening from their standpoint. And if we can stay in that space so that we don't feel like we have to be revengeful, hateful, angry about it, and yet hold the energy of compassion for them and take the steps necessary to allow it to shift. And that's mm-hmm. what I was talking about. I mean, on a day-to-day basis, every person claiming their ability to shift in their own lives the things that need to change so that they are living a benevolent, peaceful, compassionate life.
Well, and you just gave me justification for what I do, so thank you.
Oh, great. Wonderful. Yes, exactly. And whatever it is, and it can be, like I tell people, I don't care if you go out and flip hamburgers at McDonald's, not that I necessarily want to eat them. It's what you're being while you're doing that. How are you feeling inside of you? That's the key. What is the feeling inside of your body when you're doing something? And it's so easy. It's so simple that it's too simple. People are looking for some great complex answer, some great star to fall out of the sky. And that is not the answer. The answer is, what is your heart saying to you? And I don't mean heart in a lovey-dovey romantic way. It's that fight between the mind and what the heart really desires. And everybody knows that tussle. I really, really want to do this. But I remember when I did this the last time and this happened, or if I do this, maybe this will happen in the future, and then I go back and forth, and the mind just sits there and jacks you around over and over and over again, when the heart's saying, no, just do this. Just do mm-hmm. this piece. And if each person would follow that, we would see changes.
Yes, I can honestly say, Tony, that I'm at a point in my life where, the universe speaks to my heart, mm-hmm. or the creator, or whoever is out there inspiring me, and I'm able to transcend the mental process. Eventually, it goes through the mental process mm-hmm. because you have to think about it at some
right,
time.
Right, exactly, definitely.
And in research, that happens. I get these revelations, and then it's like, whoa, where did that come from? Where is
right.
this going to take me? But I stay in the heart, and then I get to the point where the mind says, well, everything is there. it's all in the heart. All the facts are there. This is mm-hmm. the order they go in, and the mind assists instead of impedes.
Right.
And I think that's the difference operating in that universal, natural way, as opposed to in this belief system that they have created for us, that these
yeah.
things can't possibly be because they're so outlandish, and no one would ever do things like that. That's exactly the methods they use to
yes.
do what they do.
Yes, yes, I agree. And it's really, as I said, a day-to-day and moment-to-moment experience for each person. I was talking to a lady today who was telling me this story, and it's just like little simple things. Like, she was telling me this story about this woman she was talking to on the telephone who really upset her and made her feel less than and da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And what am I going to do about this woman? And I said, well, all I can do is tell you what I would do. I would call the woman up, and the first thing I would do is apologize to her for the conversation that we had. I would take full responsibility for that conversation, even if I wasn't the one who instigated it. And once the apology was done, I would say to her, so, now we're at odds. What can we do together to mend these odds? What can we do to bring alignment to our relationship again?
Mm-hmm.
That's all. That's simple. I said, all you need to do is offer it. Just offer
it. I can tell you from personal experience, it works.
It does work. And she didn't want to do it. And I don't know if she's going to do it or not, but that's immaterial. I mean, I can't make her do it. But it's that simple. Instead of putting up a wall or a barrier or a boundary or trying to make sure that the other person knows you're right or da 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 da, to just go forward and mend those things that appear broken. Those
mm-hmm.
things where it looks like the bridge has been burned. It hasn't been burned. All you have to do is go build it again.
Yeah, and that's usually pride and ego.
Yes, it is.
And nothing more, and that really, that's an illusion.
Yeah, it is. It is an illusion. And I know that if you got a chance to talk to somebody in those circumstances, and I didn't have that long to talk to her, so I didn't really get into the nitty-gritty of it all, you would get to the point with a person where they, though they feel that they're right, they feel really awful about the fact that they feel they're right, because now they don't know what to do. We don't know where to go from this position of being right. You know, everybody wants to be the top dog on the heap and be right, but once they get there, now what? You know, they're just there, and they don't have any feeling or fulfillment inside themselves because there isn't any connection with the other person or the situation or whatever it is. They've broken the connection so that they have dismembered themselves. Instead of remembering themselves, they've dismembered themselves from whatever it is. And that's what we've done as a country. You know, I mean, everybody keeps talking about how much everybody hates the United States. Well, it's because we've disconnected ourselves from everybody and said we're the top dog on the heap. And it doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about reaching out. No, it's just about reaching out to others.
Yeah, well, the people that are running the show are reaching out to take from our hands what we have.
Oh, yeah, I know. Yeah, I understand that. No,
that's how they reach out.
Yeah, I understand that.
Yeah, there was a moment of sarcasm there.
I know. You get ticked off, and I just don't get ticked off about it. I mean, sometimes I laugh, but I just. To me, all of these people, all these political players, are like little children,
mm-hmm.
and they're just up there playing this. I get the biggest toy in the sandbox game.
Let me ask you a question here, Tony, and I think this is for the benefit of our listening audience as well as for myself and anyone out there that is going to connect with this question. In light of this, I mean, you're talking about truisms, and this is all is what the truth is made up of. Why is it that those who are speaking the truth are so vehemently attacked? Is it that this bloodline or their plans are really that covert and that dark that they feel threatened if we should know what their intention is. After all, these are supposed to be secrets, and we're supposed to be the sheeple, too stupid to know what's going on, and that we are conscious of what's going on and speaking out. Is that the only reason we are attacked?
No, I think really that the only reason people or anyone attacks anybody else is because they realize that their foundation is unstable. And because it's unstable, it's the same thing with the ego personality. The ego personality knows how unstable it is in relation to the higher self or spirit or whatever you want to call it. And that's why it puts up such an attack front to maintain itself when we're talking about people needing to be right. And it's the same reason that other people attack, like you're talking about the people who are attacking the ones who are in the truth. It's because they know how unstable they are, and the only thing that they can do is fight, they believe. If they sit down and have a logical conversation, they realize that it's going to fall apart. So they just attack.
Yeah, well, it's this insatiable need to dominate others.
Yeah.
And control others.
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly. And that is the bloodline, is that control. And that's what it's been for religion, government, our schools, even parents. Parents are taught to control their children, and they do it with a real heavy hand. And then they wonder why they raise children who are violent.
Mm-hmm. You sound like you've been listening.
What?
Oh, I'm sorry. Go. I was going to say, you sound like you've been listening to Evident Footprints.
Oh, well, yes, I have been a bit, and this has been my philosophy for a long time. I didn't raise my children like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's schizophrenic. We say that everyone is supposed to be espousing love, and then we teach our children violence by our actions.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't make any sense. So it's all been control, and it still is to a great extent, except that we're seeing it fall apart here and there. And it's just in the very beginning throes of its birthing process, beginning mm-hmm. stages of labor. Not fully dilated, not ready for the baby yet.
Yeah.
You know, it's just the beginning throes of people actually starting to be able to see.
You know, the English language in many art forms, like in poetry and prose or writing stories or lyrics to songs, is a very unique language. Mm-hmm. I speak some other languages, and I can tell you that it's more difficult to make phrases rhyme in French or in German than it is in English. Yet we don't really understand the meaning of the words that we use. And you use the word apart a couple of times, and remember or remembering, and how we use those words and what they really mean to us. It's almost like there's a dichotomy or a 180-degree shift intentionally put into the language. And I've said this on other shows before, but like the word apart, it's an important word about our oneness. If mm-hmm. you are a part of society, you belong to society
mm-hmm.
in that
mm-hmm.
sense.
Mm-hmm.
When we put the two words together, the word a and the word part, and make one word out of it, it now is the opposite. Apart,
right,
meaning
exactly.
Divided. That's
right.
Insane.
I know. The English language is full of that. I think it's funny. And that's why I love the word remember, and when I write it hyphenated. Remember,
mm-hmm.
to bring the members back together.
Yes.
Remember.
But I was just going to say, we're taught that the word remember means to recall in the mind.
Right. Right, exactly. The other word I've been playing with lately is chaos. I just sent out an email about a retreat I'm putting on in New Mexico, in Angel Fire, New Mexico. That I was invited to do. I was just invited to put on a retreat. Nobody really knew what I was going to do. They just wanted me to come and put on a retreat, and so I started playing with it. And I looked up the word chaos, because I just wanted to do something on chaos, because chaos is so important to embrace. And I found out that the original definition of chaos is primal emptiness.
Hmm.
And that we have created primal emptiness to to mean disorder.
Yes. Now, when you say primal emptiness, the first thing that comes to my mind is the president's IQ. But,
well, that would be chaos, too. That would be chaos in the other way, the other meaning. Well, he's a good Christian, and from what I was reading, it was the Christians that decided it should mean disorder. So that goes. It works.
Okay. Yeah, but that would...
Go ahead. I was going to ask you if you know what the program Doctor Who is.
Doctor Who? That sounds familiar, but it's not ringing
a bell. It's a science fiction program. It's been on for years.
Oh, okay.
And it's really good. It's really great. They make super good points in it. And one of the last ones we just watched, they did a whole program on beings who came from another planet who turned into werewolves.
Hmm.
And if they bit you or if they scratched you, especially if they bit you, you would become a werewolf. I mean, they didn't have to bite you. I mean, just a tiny little nick, and you're a werewolf, which means that you would turn into a werewolf at night, and during the day you're just a regular human. And the screenplay, or the movie we were watching, took place in England, and the Doctor Who, who's the hero, was protecting Queen Victoria.
Hmm.
Which was in the, late 1800s, beginning of the 1900s.
Yeah, and I just did some research there. So,
right,
yeah.
I know you did. And so they managed, of course, to subdue the werewolves, but not before one nicked Queen Victoria. And as soon as she got nicked, she didn't change physically. She just simply changed demeanor. And she thanked Doctor Who for all of his work and everything he had done to save her and her staff and everything, and banished him from the country forever. He was never to come back, him and his crew, ever again.
Hmm.
Because, and that's what the whole story was about, the werewolves were trying to take over the country. They were trying to get one of theirs to be a ruler of the country in the
mm-hmm.
story. And now they had someone who was going to be the ruler of the country who was one of them. And the first thing they did was to get rid of the one person who knew how to control them. And after it was over, we went, wow, that was really great.
So it brought back to memory my articles, right? You're
mm-hmm.
thinking, yeah.
Yeah, it did. It did. It did. I'm going, okay, I wonder if Don knows about Doctor Who.
Well, I was writing about vampires, actually, in my research, but...
Oh, I see, right? Well, werewolves and vampires aren't too far apart.
No, they're from the same same family, basically.
Yeah, this is true.
Well, now, I know you wanted to mention some things about current events, such as the election, and... you know my feelings about, we have three stooges running. There's no mention of Ron Paul at all. And I have to say that. I'm absolutely convinced, my follow-up research supports the research that I did, that there were others that have found similar names, or they're on the same path to what I've uncovered. So I cannot back this concept of a free country and free elections, because we are not allowed to pick the candidates we want. We're not allowed to nominate the candidates. They control everything. And then to boot, if we did, let's say, for example, if the whole country wanted Ron Paul, they would rig the election. So any way you look at it, we are facing a corrupt system.
Mm-hmm.
What did you want to add to that?
Well, nothing in particular. I just knew that we would end up talking about it. My heart is drawn to Barack Obama. It was from the first time I ever saw him, whether he was speaking or not speaking. And I know that goes against your particular feelings in your research, and that's okay. I think that people really need to feel inside of themselves who they want to vote for, rather than what they're hearing. I just I wish I could take what I feel inside me sometimes and just stick it in a person and say, here, feel what this feels like. Because people are so stuck in their minds about what they hear from other people, they can't really make a decision based on what they really feel most of the time. I mean, it's just like a whole bunch of, like you said, what did you call them? Sheeple? Yeah, there's a whole bunch of sheeple, and you just take them and say, there, follow the lead sheep off the cliff, and they just go, like the lemmings. And I totally honor what you're saying, and I honor your feelings about the whole political scheme. And I'm just, you know, saying to the listeners, feel in your heart what you feel when you listen to these people talk, no matter who it is. When you see their face, when you look at their facial expression, see what happens inside your body and make a decision there, rather than trying to figure it out based on some kind of a value system that, like you're saying, has no value, because everything is controlled from behind the scenes anyway.
Well, we're just the feeling I get, Tony, and I'm honoring what you're saying, because I use that every day in choosing my friends and deciding who I'm going to do business with and the like, even who I'm going to play games with. You have to feel that there's something that you can connect with another person. And all three of these people give me the creeps. And when I went down into the rabbit hole and did the research, I found justification. They're puppets.
Okay.
And I would prefer to vote for Howdy Doody or in that movie Magic with Anthony Hopkins and Anne Margaret, a dummy that can talk, at least, and knows it's a dummy. But not a political puppet that's going to be carrying out the bloodline's goals. And I see the people that way. I have to speak the truth. And you know, it saddens my heart to know that that's all we have for candidates. So I'm still operating from the heart. It's just not lining up.
What I feel, though, you know, when you say all we have for candidates, because, and I'm just using this as a scenario, because it looks so bleak, I don't really believe it really is. It's kind of like it's darkest before the dawn type of feeling. Like, I just have this really strong sense that something really glorious, and I don't mean that in a God way, I just mean wonderful, is just around the corner. And if we'll just hold tight and stick together and not give up the ship, I have this strong feeling that it's there. And I don't know how it's going to come.
Yeah, I agree with you. I have to be honest again and say that I don't see it with the candidates that they've given us. Now, I can say to a certain extent I feel Ron Paul would be the better choice of the four, although he's been so downplayed and lied about in the media as a non-entity that he doesn't stand the chance on the basis of the public's consciousness right now.
Right.
But are there other people in the world or in this country who would be great presidents? Absolutely. What would it take for us to get one of those people into the forefront?
Well, we have to change the system.
Yes, and so I look at that. This is why I spend time exposing what is behind the system, the secrets of the system, because they think, because they're their secrets, that they're only available to them.
Oh, that's true, yeah.
And in recognizing our oneness, I am privy to that information whether they like it or not, you see?
Right, exactly. Yeah, you're right.
Okay. So I'm not demeaning what you're saying. I understand that.
I understand what you're saying.
You know, I can look at George Bush, and he can make me laugh because it's like watching the comedian Frank Caliendo that does a great impersonation of him.
Uh-huh.
And I say to myself, yeah, Frank's really got him down. But there's no substance to what he says because he constantly contradicts himself. and to know the backgrounds of these people and their drug dealing and their money laundering and their theft and the murder that they've committed. How can I feel compassion for these people in my heart for the things that they've done? You see, it's not the people, it's what they do. Okay? So in my mind, and in the minds of many people, I think what they want to see in the president is someone, or in any kind of leadership, someone that is going to do what they say and be the person they claim to be. Not a fraud, not a phony, not an alias, not a fiction of someone else's imagination and someone's diabolical scheme. That's the reality of the world today. You didn't know I was going to preach tonight, did you?
Yes, I did. But, for one, remember?
Yes, yes. Now, now, do you feel that coming from my heart or coming from my mind?
Both.
Well, there's a little bit of thought behind it. What came through the heart has to be come out in words, and I have to think about it before I say it.
I don't believe that you can't feel compassion in your heart for these people. I believe that you might feel that right in this moment, in the energy of the moment, but I don't believe in the quiet of the moment that that is true.
Well, like I said, I can listen to George Bush and think of Frank Caliendo doing an impersonation. I haven't seen anything that he has done that has helped this country, nor his father.
But, no, I agree with you, and I would certainly not want to walk in his shoes.
Yeah. Now, is Barack Obama a good speaker? Yes, absolutely fantastic. Compared to the other two, when I know what Hillary Clinton is saying are lies, as they come out of her mouth, I recognize them as lies because I know the truth of the person. I know her history, and I know her roots. There's nothing she can say that can convince me that she means or intends anything that she's saying. They're false promises and shallow promises. That is my perception. Now, Obama, who knows anything about him? He came out of nowhere. How did that happen? He's part of the bloodline. He's a fictional character that they have created and trained very well. Can I feel compassion for him? Yes, I can even feel compassion for the Illuminati, because one day they're going to suffer for all the treachery that they've committed on this planet. And I can imagine what that would be like to have to go through that. So yes, I can even feel compassion for them. I can. But that doesn't mean I have to agree with them.
No, 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 no.
Or break bread with them,
or pray
with them, because to do so is to do the opposite of what who I am, and who I think most of us are.
Okay.
I'm finished with that. Your turn.
Well, I just think about Jesus, you know. He sat and he ate and he drank with the money changers and all of the people that were hated so much. And I always go back to that place.
Yes. Did he have any enemies?
He had lots of enemies.
Yeah.
He had more enemies than he had friends.
Yes. And the enemies he had were those that were not telling the truth.
Right.
Okay.
Definitely.
In fact, they were in the religious community. The rabbis hated him because he was popular.
And
because he was speaking the truth. He was revealing the truth to people, and people were attracted to that like graphite to a magnet.
Mhm. That's true.
And ever since that time, who has been persecuted by those people? Those very same rabbis today are busy persecuting the Christians around the planet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we've had God, and God for that matter. They've taken God out of the school. They've even taken God out of the church.
Yeah, that's true. It's nothing but another political organization.
Yes, but I understand Jesus' message about compassion, but he was also intolerant of those people, and he came right out and told them what he thought of them.
I know.
He didn't couch his words.
Nope.
And you know, if we get into the Bible, which we really didn't intend to, I mean, God destroyed cities for their corruption, and he'll
well,
do
see,
it again.
Now, this is where I say, wait a minute. We don't know that that was God, because the Sumerian tablets will tell us exactly the same story. And it is, I just found out the other day, which I was kind of pleased to find out, that it is becoming common knowledge now that the Hebrews actually wrote the Old Testament based on what they heard in Babylon while they were there as prisoners of the Anunnaki. And they wrote down what they were told. So I'm not sure it was God destroying cities.
Well, if we're all one, then we have to be one with God. Who else would it have
been? Well, yes, well, of course. But I mean God as in the God, of, you know, striking the city. It's well, he, let's put it this way. They weren't agents of God. They were agents of themselves, just like the political structures that are here today.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, our military did that to Baghdad and Fallujah and many other cities in Iraq and Afghanistan. And it's going on in Africa, although we don't hear about that. You know, they funnel money in.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's awful over there. Yeah, I agree.
Yes. Well, this took an interesting turn. You got to hear my passionate side about some of these issues.
Oh, I knew I would. It's good. I like it.
Now these, another thing, you know, I'm referring to my notes here. Hidden agendas, what are those? Those are plans that these people have, basically just their collective goals, right? They're the things that they
intend. Right, it's everything you've been talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the hidden agendas of the bloodline to rule and control and to make the people into more sheep than they are. And I don't think it's going to work. That's what I'm saying. I just feel like there's this turning point in the darkness of it, in the bleakness of it. There's this tipping point, and I think that we're getting very close to that. And I don't have anything to base it on. All I can, it's like one of those moments, those aha moments. I just feel it. And then, I don't know if you saw that YouTube that I did. It was quite a while ago. It was probably like 5 months ago, 6 months ago. And it was the most bizarre experience that I actually made a movie about it, because I have never had this happen to me like this. I had a dream. I don't dream about politics. I mean, I never have in my life. And I had a dream that I was in a room with all of these people at this great big long table, and they were all looking at me and thanking me for having come there. And it was like a political group, and I didn't know it, but it wasn't the kind of political group that you'd think of in a like a convention now. It was just a room with a table and these maybe 20 people.
Mm-hmm.
And I woke up, and I thought, wow, what was that? Because I could feel what it was about. And I went right back to sleep, and now I'm with the same people, and I'm in the same room, but I'm at a different place on the table, and I'm at the long side instead of up towards the head. And this huge book is brought out into the room and put down on the table in front of me, and it's opened. And I reached for it to see what it was, and somebody closed it again and looked at me and said, "The man who is going to be elected will bring back the ancient knowledge." And I woke up. And it was so real. It was just as concrete as our conversation right now. And so I made this little YouTube about it. And people started emailing me like, "Oh, is it this person? Is it this person?" And I said, they didn't get a name, okay? It's just somebody who's going to bring back the ancient knowledge. And I thought, wow, what a blessing that was. Because that's really what we need, is the ancient knowledge in all respects. So the people will know about the bloodline, so that we all know that the ancient ways of healing, all of the ancient things, all of the things that have been lost, all the books in Alexandria that were burned, all of the things that have been destroyed on this planet in the name of control, they still exist. They exist in the hologram. There's no reason why we can't access them and really know what we are.
Yes. Well, it sounds like a prophetic dream for sure.
Oh, it's wonderful.
Yeah, the book is the knowledge. It's the Akashic record, if you want to call
it
that.
Exactly. Yeah, that's what it was. Yeah, it was just beautiful. So we will see what we will see, my dear.
Okay, well, this is an interesting interview tonight, and I want to thank you for tolerating my fervor. I have good reason to be fervent these days, especially when some of my friends are being singled out and attacked. Mm-hmm. And I know it's how we react to this. We're keeping cool heads.
Mm-hmm.
But it's important for people to wake up because, despite this feeling, and I share this feeling that you have, that things are swinging, that there's something, a precipitous event that's going to cause things to turn for the better, is what I would call
mm-hmm.
it.
Mm-hmm.
And it may be the upswing of the pendulum for a change. And, I, like everyone else, will be here and dealing with whatever that is along with everyone else. I'm not going to be outside of that. So we will all experience that.
Yes,
the thing is that, in your message, we can create it.
Yes,
we can co-create exactly what we would intend or what we would choose.
We are the only ones who can.
Well,
each person,
that's true.
There's nobody else to do it. No, there's nobody else on the planet to do it but us. We are here. We are doing this. So, you know, what do we want to do?
So you're saying we can't rely on Bill Gates?
I don't think so. I think he wants to go into retirement, quite frankly. He wants to work with his foundation. Microsoft is going belly up, so he wants out now. Microsoft's having some problems.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And I think you are right. Many things are going to be revealed. Of course, we have been putting out the truth about the non-energy crisis, yet
mm-hmm.
that should not even be the issue. The issue should be, I think, what types of energy we should be using for
mm-hmm.
the benefit of the planet and for a healthy lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
And the things that we can do to bring back natural health and wholeness
yes.
as physical and mental beings. There's been
yes.
so much manipulation going on that, you know, the tolerance of those of us who are awake is very short-lived now. You know, we want to see change. We're at the point where we want to affect that change. And
we have to be it to see it.
Yes, exactly.
Yes.
So can I still babysit your horses?
I'm not mad at you.
I didn't say you were.
No, you said you thanked me for tolerating your outburst or whatever it was you called it. I didn't tolerate anything. I'm not a tolerant person. I would have yelled back if I felt I had to tolerate something.
So you didn't tolerate. No, I didn't.
Oh, you are bad.
No, I'm trying to be a gracious host, but you know these are serious issues. You understand that. You know that I'm
You know
speaking.
One of the most dangerous things on this planet is being polite. Polite is a cover for the truth.
Well, yes, I'm hitting the truth, but I also believe you know in opening a door for a lady and treating a lady like a lady, and you are that. You are.
Well, I don't have people open doors for me. I open my own doors. I'm sorry.
Well, you know, you're going to be carrying the boxes. Somebody's got to open the door for you.
That's what usually happens around here.
You see, you met your match.
I love it. I love it. It's great. Yes, you can babysit my horses. My problem is first I have to buy them.
Oh, you haven't bought them yet. Okay.
No,
well,
but the thing that's interesting is a lady down the street that has the horse I want and had put it in a different pasture somewhere, I left her a card telling her I loved this one horse that she had, and all of a sudden it's back in the pasture.
Hmm.
I mean, it was gone for like a month.
She's afraid you might go steal it or something.
Probably. I don't know. It was gone, and I didn't know where it was, so I just left her this card saying, I really love your Korab horse, and all of a sudden it's back. So now when I drive by, I can wave fondly at this horse. But I don't know. I've had horses before, and we want to travel, and it's just not fair to the horses.
Yeah.
To leave them, and it's hard enough leaving the garden, far less a horse. I'm so spoiled.
Well, Tony, before we sign off here, and before I give you the last word, I just want to tell you that I can feel your energy, and I can feel that we shifted through some stuff here. And
I know.
And not just for me, for some other people that I know are listening. And it's going to give everyone a new perspective on what we can do to change things. And with that said, I want to have you back more often, as you know, because mm-hmm. And I'm going to allow you to speak more than me.
That I don't believe.
Listen to you.
We don't want you changing personalities on us now, there.
Well, I don't want you to believe. I want you to know, okay?
There you go.
I want to give you the last word. If there's something that you can tell a listener out there that's heard all of this and is going through these same things that we all are,
mm-hmm.
Sort of sum up in 100 words or less,
I'm going to give them a little thought.
Okay,
you know what I want you to do, all you listeners there, that we're all sitting in the same place, because I know that non-locality exists, so you're sitting in my lap. I want you to be better. I want you to be better than you think you can be, that you believe that you can be. So every time you begin to feel like you have to lash out, or you have to have the last word, or you have to be in control of the situation, I want you to stop for just a minute and ask yourself what would be better in that moment than what your normal reaction is. Because what you want to do is respond. That's responsibility, rather than reacting, which means you're just doing the same thing over again. Just be better, and then watch the world be better with you. That's all I have to say for now.
That's a great message. Now, in honor of that message, would you close the show for me tonight?
What do you want me to do?
Just say goodnight to the listeners.
Oh,
thanks,
yeah,
Jess, for the
sure.
sound, and Don Newsom for making the show possible.
I will do that.
And tell him we'll see him tomorrow night.
Okay. First, I'll thank Don Newsom for making the show possible. Thank you, Don, and I hope all is well in your life. Thank you, Seth. I love hearing your voice when you get on the phone with me. We've been talking a lot. And I want to thank Don for being such a wonderful and gracious host for me. And he will see you tomorrow night with another wonderful guest. Thank you very much for listening to Evident Footprints.
Thanks for having me on.
Thank you for having me on.
No, I'm thanking you.
Oh!
You're the host now.
Sorry. You're welcome. Thank you for being on.
We'll say goodnight, folks.
Good night.
Exact details of a simple and proven system that quickly puts $5,000 to $10,000 in many students' pockets every week. What's most amazing is that there are almost no computer skills required, and you can start pulling in cash automatically within just a few hours. We are absolutely convinced that our proven system will create massive wealth for virtually anyone, and we'll prove it. Go to bbscashflow.com now and get all the details. That's bbscashflow.com.